So if we look at the answer choices here, aortic regurgitation, that is going to be a decrescendo holodiastolic murmur. That is auscultated generally along the left sternal border. We have our aortic valve region, which is second intercostal space, right sternal border, but that regurg can just fall right down the left sternal border. So although the murmur in the question here is along the left sternal border, our patient, our 72-year-old, has a holosystolic murmur, but aortic regurg is a holodiastolic murmur, so we can eliminate that right away. It should also be noted that aortic regurg presents with bounding pulses, okay? Bounding pulses reflects the wide pulse pressure, which is the big difference between systolic and diastolic. In an aortic regurg question, they might give you a blood pressure of 120 over 40 or 160 over 60. And you're like, that kind of seems like a big difference. Well, that's your wide pulse pressure, okay? That reflects bounding pulses, head bobbing, where the blood enters the aorta, the arterial circulation, and then quickly falls back out of the arterial circulation into the heart, which is why your diastolic is down. Aortic regurg can also be described as pulses that are a brisk upstroke with precipitous downstroke, okay? Pulses characterized by brisk upstroke and precipitous downstroke. That also reflects our bounding pulses. That's a descriptor I've memorized from NBME questions. Obviously more we can chat about, but I'll just move us through. The congestive heart failure, you need to know diagnosis of congestive heart failure means left heart failure plus right heart failure. So when we have left heart failure, we're going to classically have signs that are pulmonary, diffuse crackles, orthopnea, which means positional dyspnea, meaning the patient needs to be more upright in order to breathe effectively, because as you lie down, as you become supine, you increase venous return, increase preload in the heart. The failing heart, the failing left heart cannot handle that preload. So you're going to get a greater backup into the lungs, greater hydrostatic pressure in the pulmonary venules, and you get transudation of that fluid into the alveolar spaces. So orthopnea, meaning the patient needs to sit up on pillows while in bed. Paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, that'll be a finding where just increased flow into the pulmonary spaces at night. So those are left heart failure signs, pulmonary, okay? Whereas right heart failure signs would be JVD, jugular venous distension, peripheral edema, especially pedal edema, and hepatosplenomegaly, okay? Once again, a lot we can chat about. Now, this patient has diffuse wheezes bilaterally, and you're like, oh, like, couldn't that be like left heart failure? Now, this is where this question's a little bit challenging, because there's some things to point out. In congestive heart failure, which is characterized by a dilated left ventricle, we're going to get a laterally displaced apex beat, okay? They'll tell you that the point of maximum impulse is in the subauxiliary line, subaxillary line, okay? It's laterally displaced. It's a big left ventricle. It's dilated. The normal apex beat is typically in the left midclavicular line, okay? Some people say, oh, wow, it's like slightly medial. It doesn't matter. The point is that a lateral displacement is an enlarged left ventricle. This patient, they tell you the point of maximum impulse is in the subxiphoid area. And you're like, that's weird. I don't really know what that means. The xiphosternum, okay, it means the point of maximum impulse is actually pushed medially. It's pushed to the midline. That's what we see when the lungs are hyperinflated. That's a finding in COPD. So they give you here that this patient has a 90-pack year history of smoking. Two packs a day for 45 years. It's a 90-pack year history of smoking with a point of maximum impulse in the subxiphoid area. So this patient has big lungs. This patient has COPD. And then on top of that, you say, well, what's going on with this murmur? What is the 2-on-6 holosystolic murmur along the left sternal border that is accentuated with inspiration? Isn't that like tricuspid regurg? Because right-sided heart murmurs increase with inspiration. Decrease intrathoracic pressure, increase venous return to the right heart. So right-sided murmurs are increased with inspiration, but that just sounds weird, right? Like a tricuspid regurg. You can get tricuspid regurg in situations where you have increased pulmonary pressure. So primary pulmonary hypertension, cor pulmonale, You can even get it. I've seen it in severe mitral stenosis where it backs up all the way through the lungs to the right heart. So a tricuspid regurg you can see with pulmonary hypertension. So this might be weird if you're seeing it for the first time. It's not. It's actually on several NBME questions. So this is a tricuspid regurg, and I want you to internalize that point about that being associated with cor pulmonale, which is what this patient has, okay? So cor pulmonale is defined as right heart failure secondary to a pulmonary cause, okay? The left heart must not be the etiology for the right heart failure. We just talked about how congestive heart failure is left heart failure plus right heart failure. It's when the left heart failure backs up all the way to the right heart and causes it to fail. Okay, most common cause of right heart failure is left heart failure. But in cor pulmonale, it must be the lungs that are the etiology, such as COPD or cystic fibrosis. Okay, you could have history of radiation to the chest for Hodgkin disease causing pulmonary hypertension and cor pulmonale. You could have Kress syndrome leading to pulmonary hypertension due to pulmonary fibrosis and cor pulmonale. So another point is pulmonary capillary wedge pressure. So that's reflective of left atrial pressure. PCWP is elevated in congestive heart failure. It's normal in cor pulmonale. That must be noted. Sometimes questions will mention that. So cor pulmonale will be the answer. Once again, it's right heart failure, secondary to a pulmonary cause. And you will get findings of JVD, pedal edema, sometimes hepatosplenomegaly. It sounds like right heart failure in somebody who has lung disease. Now, in this question, you say, well, couldn't it also be the left heart? I mean, this patient has hypertension. Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is where things have some overlap. You have to look at a patient holistically and, you know, make a broader assessment. So this patient absolutely has hypertension, which could cause the left heart to fail and in turn the right heart to fail. But what's overwhelming is the 90-pack your history of smoking and the point of maximum impulse in the subxiphoid area. So cor pulmonale is our diagnosis here. Mitral regurgitation would also be a 2-on-6 holosystolic murmur, but it would be accentuated with expiration, not inspiration. It might also radiate to the axilla. Primary pulmonary hypertension, that's an interesting one. Easy to confuse with cor pulmonale. Primary pulmonary hypertension is almost always a genetic cause, okay? It's a mutation in BMPR2 gene. They're going to give you generally a youngish woman who's a non-smoker, who's got a 6-month history of increasing shortness of breath. And when you do a chest x-ray, you'll see increased pulmonary vascular markings, which reflects the backup of the hydrostatic pressure due to the constriction of the pulmonary vessels. They might also tell you that there's a loud P2, or they can say a loud S2. That refers to, or that reflects the pulmonic valve slamming shut due to the high distal pulmonary arterial pressure. And the right heart will be fine at the moment. Okay, that's how we say primary pulmonary hypertension. Because once again, if we have right heart failure due to a pulmonary etiology, then that's cor pulmonale. But in primary pulmonary hypertension, just as a diagnosis, that's it. Like if that's our answer choice, it's going to reflect, once again, generally a non-smoker. And it'll be a non-smoker who has increased pulmonary vascular markings and a loud P2, and the right heart will not have yet decompensated. Now, let's say the right heart has decompensated in someone with primary pulmonary hypertension, then you could say, yes, this patient has cor pulmonale due to primary pulmonary hypertension. But once again, that's not our vignette here. And if you were to actually get a USMLE question with that type of overlap, they would need to be crystal clear as to what they're looking for. So it can also be noted that pulmonary hypertension is most often treated with dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers. Okay, so most patients will respond to dihydropyridine calcium channel blockers such as amlodipine, but there's other agents such as bosentan, which is an endothelin-1 receptor antagonist. That's really high yield for USMLE, especially step one, okay? Bosentan is an endothelin 1 receptor antagonist that's effective in pulmonary hypertension. You need to know that endothelin 1 agonism, okay, it's a natural mediator in the lungs. Endothelin 1 agonism results in constriction of pulmonary vessels. So if we antagonize that, that's a treatment for pulmonary hypertension. Sometimes the question will ask the inverse. They'll give you, let's say, a 28-year-old woman, non-smoker, with increased pulmonary vascular markings and allowed P2, and you're like, okay, sounds like primary pulmonary hypertension. And then they say, which of the following could be seen in this patient? And the answer could be like choice A, increased expression of endothelin 1. Okay, sounds weird, but if you know the high-yield drug bosentan is an antagonist, then that's not hard to infer. You can actually use sildenafil as well, Viagra, to treat pulmonary hypertension, and isoprostenol, which is a prostaglandin. Once again, a lot we can chat about. That's it.